This is a Boardwalk Audio podcast.
Hello and welcome to Duck Snort Baseball Podcast. I'm Greg Nix.
I'm Wayland McQueen.
And we are back with another week of baseball action. We're getting pretty close to the home stretch here.
The POs?
The playoffs. Yeah, that's what everybody calls them. That's why I instantly knew what you were talking about.
Didn't give me a look of like, you're already talking nonsense.
Yes, the POs approach.
That's the worst.
And we will be talking POs. We're gonna talk the NIMs, the New York Mets, and their kind of crazy hot streak. We're going to be talking about some of the hot rookies of the, in the league, who are not the rookies that we would expect to be dominating necessarily. Yeah. And we might talk a little bit of AL Central at the end. Before we get to that, we do want to give a shout out, as always, to Boardwalk Audio and to OffTheBenchBaseball.com for their help with producing and distributing the show. Visit both of those organizations, those sites, BoardwalkAudio.com, OffTheBenchBaseball.com, for podcasts and baseball analysis, respectively. Presumably, if you're listening to this baseball podcast, you enjoy baseball and podcasts.
Boy, so, what if you hate it? Unless you're, this is a torture.
Someone's torturing someone. If you're listening to this in a CIA black site.
No they, more baseball.
They
no
found more. The most like niche comedian bantery podcast for you to listen to. Torturous.
So, I'm sorry, we apologize that you're being
But you maybe deserve it. I don't know. Do we trust the CIA to be?
I don't know. Does anybody? The debate is: does anybody deserve torture?
Yeah, I guess that's true. So. I guess the answer probably is no. So maybe you just should sit in your cell and listen to whatever podcast you want in your prison time. Boy, we are really off to a running start here. I saw a tweet from somebody who, when basically, when I was sort of hosting an improv show every week, mm-hmm. they were like just starting doing improv, and they would come to the show every week, and they were super enthusiastic about the show and about the whole improv scene or whatever. And then I saw a tweet from them yesterday that said, instead of torturing people, like, the CIA should send them to indie improv shows. And I was like, wow, things really went downhill for you.
It happens to everybody.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I don't necessarily disagree that indie improv shows are torturous, but it was a stark difference in their perspective.
In their mood, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, speaking of torture, a lot of Mets fans...
Oh, what a segue.
A lot of Mets fans considered, I guess, their entire fandom a torture, but especially the first part of the season. And yet, the Mets are in the thick of the race. Brody Van Wagenen, the secret genius, who knew that acquiring Marcus Stroman would light the fire that the Mets needed? They have won 15 out of their last 16 games. And they
are really
now
impressive.
As we speak, they are, I should have looked this up, I think a half game out of the wild card, right?
They're pretty close. Yeah.
It's very close. It's them, the Nationals. I'm pulling it up right now.
They're a half game out tied with the Cardinals behind Milwaukee and Washington.
There you go.
And then Philadelphia is a game and a half out. So they're ahead of Philadelphia now. They're approaching the Nationals. So they're rocking it up the standings.
Tied with St. Louis, who have been slumping pretty badly since the trade deadline.
Yeah, they have not been playing super well.
So how are we feeling on the Mets? What do we think here? I guess question is like, can they keep it up enough to be sort of in the front runner seat? Like, do we think that they will? They're only a half game out, so I guess just pure variance could put them in first place. But like, compared to these other teams that are in the hunt, and let's say I'm gonna limit it to six teams here, which are within 2.5 games. We got the Nationals, the Brewers, the Cardinals, the Mets, the Phillies, and the Diamondbacks.
Taking out the Giants, yeah.
I'm taking out the Giants and the Reds.
I think that's a good move, yeah. I don't think they're going to do it. Can they win the wild card? Yeah, I think that's your first question, essentially, right? Can they keep up? I mean, I think they have a better chance than the Diamondbacks for sure.
Yeah.
Right. So, like,
well, although the Diamondbacks have the best run differential of any of these teams by a very large margin.
The Nationals, there's still a lot more in the Nationals, but the Nationals are the only one that is even in the sphere of.
Yes. But obviously, the Diamondbacks, you know, sold Zach Greinke.
Yeah. I mean, all season we've been impressed with the Diamondbacks, but not 100% sure how they've been playing this well.
Yeah.
Right. So.
But that would sort of put us where the Mets are right now. Of like, I'm impressed with the Mets. I'm not sure what exactly changed, but they do have a lot of talent on the roster. That's what it comes down to.
So I think on the spectrum of how good the Mets should or could be, they're playing now closer to what we expected at the beginning of the season based on their roster.
Sort of. I think
no one thinks that they are 15 and
of course
16
not.
Good. Like this, but like.
Going into the season, I think the Mets were one of the more confusing teams, right?
Because
they have these, obviously, they have Syndergaard and DeGrom and Wheeler and Mats to, you know, a lesser extent in the rotation as like a really good front of the rotation guys. And then they have Conforto, they had Alonso, who we didn't know about at the beginning of the season. But I think the confusing thing about the Mets at the beginning of the season was the sort of like Robinson Cano of it all, the Yoenis Cespedes of it all, where these veteran guys who we weren't sure how much they would contribute, and those guys have subsequently contributed absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
You know.
But then we have like Jeff McNeil pretending he's like an 80s hitter with like all average, which is, I don't know, fine.
I mean,
probably good.
Really good. Yeah. You know, he's got a 934 OPS.
Yeah.
I don't know that I would describe him as an 80s hitter. Like, I think it's. It
just seems like he doesn't have a ton of power, right?
I mean, he's got 29 doubles and 15 homers. Like, he only doesn't have.
This year, that's not a lot of power. In the 80s, that's a ton of power.
Right. Yeah, it's more like relative to Pete Alonso. He doesn't have a lot of power, but he's going to probably finish with, you know, 25 homers and 35 doubles.
Yeah, I think he's leading the league in average, too, right? Or he's right up there?
I don't know if he's hitting 335, so he is certainly.
That's up there.
Up there.
It's Yelich, but he's a point behind Yelich.
Yeah.
Oh, man, Yelich might win the Triple Crown. While also being
missing
the playoffs, but also in a situation where you win the unlike when Cabrera won it and it's like an empty win. If Yelich won it, I feel like he'd also be
the best player in
the
league.
Best player or up there with Bellinger. I think the Mets can stay in there. I think to me, probably the Nationals have the most just talent, but Scherzer's hurt, right?
Scherzer's hurt, and they're taking their time bringing him back. I honestly don't know. I would have said that in general terms, but I don't know anymore because just with the way that everybody on the Mets is playing, I mean, Amed Rosario is playing much better and sort of living up to his prospect type in a way. You know, Wilson Ramos is still probably a top 10 catcher, I would say. J.D. Davis is hitting well. Michael Conforto is hitting well. And on the DL, they have Dominic Smith and Brandon Nimmo, who were both sort of either a top prospects or productive major leaguers.
Yeah.
I feel like somehow the Mets have this immense amount of talent that was just, especially with the addition of Stroman, that, you know, it was obscured by them being the Mets so hard for so long for this season, you know, and obscured by like the Jason Vargas incident and this Mickey Callaway stuff and Robinson Cano being so bad and all of that. And then suddenly you look at their roster and you're like, wait a second, is this like the best team in the division? Like,
I mean, when going into the season, we were like, there are four teams that we thought were pretty much equal.
Yeah.
And we thought probably the Phillies and Nationals were maybe a little better than the Braves and Mets, right?
Yeah.
That was like the consensus. That's probably what we thought.
Yes.
I think the Mets are up there. Like, I have more faith in the Mets than the Phillies at this point. I mean, the Phillies have a lot of talent on paper, but it's not come through at all.
It's true.
Or, I mean, not at all. They're obviously in the thick of the hunt, but they're 3 games above 500 with a negative 30 run differential.
Yeah.
So they're
and it's also just that, I mean, this rotation, right? That's why everybody
for the
before
Mets.
The season for the Mets was kind of like, well, you know, the moves were maybe questionable, but you just can't count them out because of the pitchers they've got. And like 1 through 5 now, like I think it's probably 1 through 5 the best rotation in the majors. Aside from the Dodgers, maybe.
Even the Astros?
Well, the Astros at the back of the rotation is like Wade Miley and like...
That's true.
Brad Peacock, but he's been
hurt.
But their
top three are just so...
Right.
But it doesn't matter.
Top three is... That's Jacob DeGrom, Noah Syndergaard, and Marcus Stroman.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. I think you're right.
I guess I would say the Astros top three is still better, but I would take Zach Wheeler over Wade Miley, and I would probably take Steven Matz over whoever the Astros are, unless, you know, the Astros call
If you go to a 5-game series and you have Stroman, Syndergaard, and DeGrom, and then like if any of them falters, you're bringing in Wheeler for 5 innings. Yeah. Like that's
imagine Wheeler as like a 2 or 3 inning guy out of the bullpen in the playoffs. That could be very nasty.
But even if like, you know, Syndergaard gets in trouble and gives up 4 runs in 3 innings, you can bring Wheeler in for until the 8th.
Yeah.
If he's on, like and then you just gotta score.
I don't know. Suddenly like I really do feel like them, at least in my mind, like them being the Mets has really obscured the fact that like, oh, there were a lot of pieces here that are just like, we're not clicking. But obviously now that we're seeing these pieces click in like almost like it's almost a 2017 Cleveland kind of a way when they went ripped off that 22 game winning streak. And you were like, holy shit. Can this team like be stopped? Like, I don't think the Mets are quite there yet, obviously. And they're not even in playoff position yet, but like suddenly there is recency bias and there is some luck here, but they suddenly look like a much like their ceiling is much higher than the other wild card teams. Like I like the Brewers a lot, but the Mets with their rotation and sort of with
because the Brewers lineup is better, but the Mets rotation is so much better.
Yeah, exactly. Like the Brewers, their ceiling is so much higher.
I don't disagree with you. I do think they're closer to that Indians team than that Rockies team from like 10 years ago that won Rocktober that ended up going all the way to the World Series, which is bizarre. I think they're good. I think that they dug themselves in enough of a hole, and I think Washington and Milwaukee are good enough where I can see the Mets still missing the playoffs.
Oh,
but
yeah,
I
for
do
sure.
think that the Mets belong in that conversation of these. I will discount the Cardinals or Phillies or Diamondbacks before the Mets, I guess, is what I'm saying. Not that I'll discount any of them. I think they could all make the playoffs. But
I'm on FanGraphs right now, and sort of they have the Mets playoff odds as a 50-50 shot right now, which seems about right to me.
Yeah.
Just by virtue of the number of teams that are in it. But...
I mean, St. Louis is barely hanging on, it feels like. But
the Mets' playoff odds since on July 24th, their playoff odds on FanGraphs were 3.9%. And since then, it's gone up to 52.4%.
That's pretty good. Here's the thing that we might not be realizing. Since they're the Mets, is this way too early? And is all they're doing is setting up everyone for this
for failure.
A Mets September fuck-up?
Well, yeah, right. That would be the question, and we have seen the downside of this team. And also, I think the risk of relying on a team that the strongest part is starting pitching, right? Is like those are like for all we know, you know, hopefully not. Knock on wood, but Jacob DeGrom could blow out his elbow in his next start.
Well,
and he
started off playing poorly, and now he's been DeGrom of last year for. I don't know how long, but 6 weeks.
I don't think he started
poorly, but
relative.
Yeah.
Right?
Not an ace.
Both he and Syndergaard were slightly underperforming and have been much better lately.
I mean, it's scary. I mean, I don't really like the Mets, so I can't say I'm enjoying this.
I don't have
this.
Anything. I guess I have like sort of, I wouldn't even call it a soft spot, but like I'm simpatico with Mets fans because like, to me, the Mets are the White Sox
in
many ways.
Run in the
you know,
city. Yeah.
Sort of like second team, like always shooting themselves in the foot.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
I felt that way about the Red Sox before both of those teams won the World Series.
Right.
And well, I still actually can feel that way. I can still have a kinship with Red Sox.
Yeah.
Asshole
it's
fans.
Just
everyone hates you. Yeah, it's a different point of view.
Fucking drunk idiots.
I mean, obviously, I'd prefer the Mets to pass the Cardinals and the Brewers.
Right.
So.
Sure.
I think it's very interesting. I think you can't. It's not a fluke. It's not like Like if it's not like when San Francisco ripped off that run and now they're falling back, which everyone can see coming from a mile away. Yeah. But I think it's more fun now. I think now we do have a 4-team race in the NL East again. Maybe not for the division. I think Atlanta's, their bullpen is so bad.
Yeah, well, they got Mark Melanson closing now.
And Melanson and Green have been terrible for them.
Yeah, they've gone through 3 closers since the trade deadline. Yeah.
And they gave up a 6-2 lead in the 9th to the Marlins yesterday.
Oh, wow. I didn't see that.
I get a lot of texts from Evan about how bad their bullpen is. And then I always check the score and the box score when he texts, and I'm like, oh, man, this is rough.
I do feel for any team that sort of the bullpen is the weak link, because that is really brutal to watch. And
they're giving up big leads,
you know, before we completely depart the topic of the Mets, I think like that is a major concern going forward, right? They got Edwin Diaz and he just hasn't been good. And some of that is bad luck, but some of that eventually, you know, I think we see it pretty often that bad luck snowballs a little bit, right? Or doesn't, good luck does not necessarily come when you've been having bad luck. Maybe you just revert to normal luck or maybe the bad luck like turns into some sort of flaw, like mechanical flaw or whatever, because the guy's trying too hard, right?
Right.
So I just wonder, you know, are we going to see anything close to the Edwin Diaz we saw last season? And if we don't, you know, is Seth Lugo really a good enough pitcher to make up for that? Or who else are they going to be relying on? Seth Lugo's having a great season, who, by the way, we saw in the World Baseball Classic 2 years ago.
Oh,
I don't know
if
you remember that.
I don't remember who we saw.
Pitching for Puerto Rico, I believe.
Oh.
But, yeah, I mean, he's having a really great season.
Is that it? As far as the bullpen goes?
Kind of. Justin Wilson is having a good year in a limited sample, but... You've seen firsthand the folly of relying on Justin Wilson, maybe. I don't know. I
mean, it's interesting. I think it's good. I mean, it's fun for baseball because the Mets are like such a punchline.
Mm-hmm.
They're a fun team to have in the mix of things, I feel like.
For sure.
Regardless of how you feel about them. And... I don't know. It's nice for Mets fans to be playing this well. Terrible for Phillies fans. This must be hell for them.
Yeah.
Their team's not playing well, and then the Mets all of a sudden are.
Yeah, I mean, the Mets, you know, we were talking right before we got on air, the Mets schedule has been a little weak, right?
And that's the one thing we should bring up,
But the Mets just swept the White Sox. The Phillies just lost 2 out of 3 to the White Sox.
I mean, the Phillies...
You know, so it's like... If you're playing bad teams on a schedule, the Mets are doing exactly what they should be doing.
Yeah, and then they just got to start beating the Nationals and Phillies.
Right.
Yeah.
Or just not getting their ass kicked by them.
Yeah.
Just holding ground.
Yeah.
If you can, that's kind of the thing with the wild card especially, is if you can beat up on the teams you should beat up on and you can hold ground to the teams that are as good or better than you, you're putting yourself in a really good position, right? Like, so many times I feel like you'll see a team miss the playoffs and you'll hear like, oh, if they hadn't gone like, you know, 6-10 against the Tigers this season, or if they hadn't like lost that series to the Marlins at the end of the season, like how different would things have been?
I think it's also a comparison to your opponent too. Like it's when you go 6-10 against the Tigers, but your opponent goes 13-3.
Right.
Like
exactly.
That is the added extra, like they took care of business and you didn't. And there's your 4 games difference.
Yeah. But let me ask you this. Are you rooting for the Mets? Like, are you who are you rooting for? Assuming, say, the Cubs are more in the division race.
Yeah.
Taking the Cubs out of the equation, who do you want to win the NL wild card?
I mean, I'd like for the Nationals to be in there because I feel bad for... I've always kind of rooted for the Nationals. They've been one of my teams that, you know, you're like...
They've always had fun
second
players,
tier teams that you like... So I like the idea of them keeping it together after Harper and like, you know, I don't know. I don't want the Nationals to, I don't want this to be, just, I want them to have like a playoff series win as long as it's not against the Cubs. After that, I mean, I'm always rooting for underdogs. So like, as it looks right now, like the Diamondbacks would be who I'd want to be in there, even though they'd probably get destroyed in a series. But like, otherwise, I don't know. I don't want the Cardinals to win. So what, it's the Phillies or the Mets?
Or the Brewers.
Yeah, I mean, the Brewers would be good for baseball because they're a fun team to watch and they have one of the best players. And like, if the Brewers end up playing the Dodgers,
that'd rematch be really, of that great series.
And also Yelich versus Bellinger. It'd be like a very, very good for baseball kind of thing. So, and of course, Lorenzo Cain and Moose have a soft spot in my heart. But they're a division team. I would hate playing the Brewers in the playoffs as a Cubs fan. I would hate if a Cubs-Brewers series.
Yeah.
And that's the, yeah. But that would have to be the CS. But
well, not necessarily, right?
Yeah, well, the Cubs aren't going to get the best record, so the wild card team's going to play the Dodgers.
Yeah.
So I don't know who I'm rooting for. I guess I'm not rooting against the Mets necessarily. I'm rooting for the Nationals overall, and then I would prefer it not to be the Cardinals or Giants, and after that, it's all kind of just fun. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Yeah. Are you rooting for the Mets? Do you want them in there?
A little bit, just because I think like they are one of the most fascinating teams, and like, with the current landscape of baseball and the trade deadline we just saw, as far as, and the offseason we just saw, as far as the teams that are being really conservative, which we've talked about on the show before, and which kind of makes it more boring to be a baseball fan, all these teams that are sort of prospect hoarding or won't spend money on free agents that may help them a lot because of they're scared of the long-term risk, right? I think the Mets obviously are going against the grain on that pretty hugely.
Yeah.
And I think, so I think seeing teams that did that be rewarded would be nice. And so of, you know, they're a pretty extreme long shot, I think, but like, it would be really nice to see the Reds make a run as well for same reason.
Yeah.
Who are 4.5 games out. And that sort of can transition us to what we're going to talk about with these new rookies, because so yesterday, which if you're listening to this, it comes out on Monday. So Saturday, the Reds rookie Aristides Aquino hit 3 home runs in a game, as did the Astros rookie Yordan Alvarez, which was the first time in Major League history that two rookies have hit 3 home runs on the same day.
What, do you think there's ever going to be a year where something didn't happen for the first time in Major League history?
No, because the game keeps changing and like, that, I mean, we talked about this literally in the very first episode of Duck Story about that's one of the things I love in baseball. It's just the most random shit, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like that, two rookies hitting 3 home runs in one day.
Exactly.
Like, you're always going to find.
There's so many categories. Yeah. There's so many, like, and there's so many people keeping stats.
Right.
You know, people keeping track of stuff like this that, you know, we're always going to be seeing it.
I love that, too. That's what I love.
Yeah.
But also, speaking of records or first time, Bo Bichette has come up and hit a double in 10 straight games, which broke the major league record of most games, consecutive games hitting a double.
Yeah, and he broke the record of most extra base hits in like first career 10 games
Like that. A lot of first 10 games, which is a small sample size, and ultimately, I think the doubles thing is pretty impressive.
For sure.
In the sense of like, it doesn't mean anything because it's like,
well, it means you're hitting the shit out of the ball.
Well, yeah, I mean,
that's for sure.
But it, like, you know, like,
it doesn't necessarily project forward as meaningful for this guy's career besides the fact that, oh, this guy hits the ball hard, right?
Yeah, but it is pretty crazy that he went 10 consecutive games hitting a double.
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
But yeah, those are the kind of the three rookies that have been
really, really,
really
hot.
Crushing it lately.
Yeah, which we kind of thought it was interesting that, you know, it's not Vlad Guerrero Jr., it's not Eloy Jimenez, it's not the guys, it's not Victor Robles, it's not the guys who were sort of these top five prospects coming into the season that everybody was really excited to see at the major league level. Those guys have been a lot more ordinary, not necessarily bad, just like not, with aside from, I guess, Vlad in the home run derby, not necessarily capturing the imagination in the way that you would think. Meanwhile, these sort of, I mean, Bo Bichette and Yordan Alvarez were both still very good prospects.
Right.
Aquino on the Reds was not necessarily very highly touted. But the fact that these guys are coming up and crushing is interesting. And I don't quite know what it says about baseball writ large necessarily, besides that it's unpredictable. But I don't know. Do you have kind of, what do you find interesting about that?
I mean, I think, I mean, I think like the overall big picture interesting thing is like I when Vlad was coming up too, like I was so excited. I was talking to my wife about it constantly, even though she didn't care. But just because his dad was one of my favorite players. And then I watched his first game and I was like, unless he goes like 3 for 4 with a home run and like two double, like, you know, like what's going to be great about this? You know what I like? But then the next day he could go 0 for 4 with 3 strikes. Like,
right.
It's like so hard to have someone who's hyped, like, come in and then live up to hype, because baseball is like,
yeah,
so much of a long stretch game. And so well, I think what I can't, I'm almost losing my point. I think the thing I take away from it is it's so difficult, no matter how good you are, to come in and make an impact like this. And I think what's to me, it's impressive that we have 3 rookies doing that right now.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's harder for, obviously when expectations are higher, it's harder to meet and almost impossible to exceed those expectations in the case of Guerrero, right? So I think probably part of it with Bichette and with Alvarez and these guys who sort of we heard less about coming into the year is that they're set up to capture the imagination in a way that a guy who you've already imagined him doing so much is not, right?
Yeah.
And so I think Austin Riley is probably a good example of like maybe what we can expect from these guys that are super hot going forward, where he came up and he was crushing like these guys and he didn't have those expectations. It was kind of out of nowhere. And since then he's sort of evened out as like, oh, okay, he's now 66 games deep. He's injured right now. He just went on the IL with a knee injury, but his OPS plus is 100 exactly.
Okay,
he's been worth a little bit less than a win over 66 games. So I think that it's instructive when thinking about like, oh, you know, Bo Bichette is going to be a superstar going forward.
You can't
expect that, right?
You can't expect that at all.
And like, that's where I think more so than these first 10, 20 games, that's where the prospect pedigree comes in of like, okay, you'd expect Guerrero to keep getting better over the course of the season and eventually be worth more than an Austin Riley or a Bo Bichette.
Which is happening with Guerrero. He's definitely better than when he first came up.
Yeah, like, I guess Yordan Alvarez has been up for 45 games now.
Oh, okay.
And his OPS is 1175. His OPS plus is 203. He's got 17 home runs in 45 games. So, like, he might be a bit of a different case where, look, I mean, okay, 45 games, 17 home runs over a full season, that's like a 60 home run pace. Like, he's not going to keep doing
that. No, of course not.
But, like, a 45-game sample is not meaningful.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know. It's so tough. We've seen rookie, I mean, there's the, however much you want to believe in it, sophomore slump, which is really just everyone has a chance to see someone and have tape on someone. Like, I don't think there's anything you can really take from it other than it's difficult to capture. I just think it's always impressive. It's just impressive to capture the imagination as a rookie.
Yeah.
I think that's like what it, like, it's hard to, it's really hard if you're not one of the best players to like get baseball talking about you.
For sure.
You have to do really well. Even though I know people knew these people coming in, especially Bo Bichette because he has his name.
Mm-hmm.
But like still, Vlad came up and I feel like no one was talking about him after like 4 days.
Yeah.
And then Bo Bichette really did it.
That's a really interesting point because I think it's like it is really specific to rookies because, you know, I'm sure there's someone in the league who has been as hot as Bo Bichette has over these 10 whatever games.
Yeah.
But like they also have like 6 years of career built up where everybody's like, oh, obviously like X player is not going to hit an extra base hit in every game for the rest of their career. But Bo Bichette, you don't know that.
Yeah,
this is their whole career. So far.
Yeah, like if Starlin Castro went on a similar run, we'd barely hear about Starlin.
Yeah. He has. I don't know.
I
haven't
heard
it. Maybe he's had a bunch of stretches like
but
that.
But I even think about like players on good teams like Nick Castellanos is killing it right now, and no one's talking about it,
right.
Which is fine. But it's like or Ian Happ.
Anti-Cubs bias.
Ian Happ has come up and has been just like playing his way into a starting position. But I do think it's very hard to get everyone in baseball rallied around you.
Unless it's the beginning of the season.
Yes.
Right. Like those first 3 weeks of the season where everybody's like, Tim Anderson is a superstar now.
Right. Or like what Eric Thames was that last year, 2 years ago. Like everyone was like this, but he had a great story. Like, the Korea thing.
Yeah, that's a little more similar to the rookies. Actually,
that is true.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, we haven't seen this guy, and now he's doing this. This is probably him forever.
Yeah.
Not quite. I don't know. I mean, like, I think for me at least, like Jeff Francoeur is the classic example of sort of like these hot starts that eventually, like, you just never know. And that guy was a top prospect, and this was sort of like confirmation. This was like the coronation, right? And then obviously he went on to become Jeff Francoeur for the rest of his career, which is a little bit sad. And like, relative to, it's not sad that he, you know, he played in the majors for 10 years or whatever,
but he had such
relative to expectations, it's sad. And that's kind of like, I don't know. I don't want to rain on Bo Bichette's parade or Aquino's parade or whatever.
They know that they're going through a hot streak.
Right.
I mean, Bo Bichette set a major league record. He'll never hit never do this, like, that specific thing again. So like, he has to know that on some level.
Sure.
But he can still be great. Two things about, or something about Frenchie I learned. Matt Olson. I learned this on the Cubs broadcast. Matt Olson's sixth grade teacher was Jeff Francoeur's mom.
Matt, well, like the on the
A's. Matt Olson's sixth grade teacher was Jeff. Math teacher was Jeff Francoeur's mom.
Where isn't Francoeur from? Like the
I think it's like
of middle of nowhere.
Yeah,
is Matt Olson from the same town in the middle of nowhere? Where is he?
I don't know if they. He must.
Well, I guess Francoeur was born in Atlanta.
I think it's like
Lilliburn, Georgia.
Yeah, I think it's.
Oh, yeah, they
like
went to the same high school along with Jeff Kepinger.
Whoa. Isn't it crazy, too? Speaking of Frank, so Francoeur is probably disappointed in his career.
He played 12 years in the majors, though.
Based on his hype.
Yeah.
Anybody like Francoeur, there has to be a little bit part, because he probably went into his career thinking he could be a Hall of Famer.
Well, okay, so I want you to finish your point, but I'm on his baseball reference page, and it's really interesting. You know, they have the similarity scores and the most similar by age.
Oh, yeah.
And so, like, 22, it's Duke Snyder. 23, like, Hall of Famer legend. 23 and 24 is Greg Luzinski and Harold Baines. All-stars, Baines is now a Hall of Famer. Which different discussion. Yeah. And then 25, it just a like downward slope of like Delmon Young for 3 years in a row, bad Jason Hayward, Juan Encarnacion. Just interesting.
Basically what I was saying is it's interesting. Francoeur had a fine career. What I'm saying is he might be a little disappointed, but then you look at someone, the flip side, that his career, you would be like, oh my, you know what I mean? Like coming to the majors being like, if you can have this guy's career,
for sure,
would you take it? And some people would be like, oh my God, hell yes, I would take that career.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, part of it, I'm not going to say he got lucky, but that like Dayton Moore really loved him.
Yeah.
But that extended his career a little bit.
And
it wasn't luck. It was like, he loved the tools that Jeff Francoeur had, right? And the potential that he still carried.
And Dayton Moore will stick with a guy.
Right.
For
too long.
Alcides Escobar.
Right.
Alex Gordon.
He'll stick with his
three
guys.
Different times, so, Alex Gordon.
So he did land probably in an ideal situation, although he did have a good year for the Royals 1 year. So,
which is like poison for someone like Dayton Moore.
Right.
Because like 1 year in Dayton Moore's mind is this equivalent of anybody else seeing somebody have three good years.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, right, exactly. But I'm sure, you know, 98% of the players in the minors would kill to have Jeff Francoeur's career. 12 years, made, you know, $40 million probably or something.
Put thoughts in Francoeur's. I'm sure he's very grateful for his career, but you can't tell me that if you're a hyped prospect, have a great first couple years that you
you're
don't...
You're on the cover of Sports Illustrated,
you don't,
like your first season.
You don't start having a little bit of, hey, I might be talked about as one of the best players, at least of my time.
Yeah.
A Hall of Very Good. And then he didn't even get that.
Yeah. I think Rick Ankiel has spoken very eloquently about that kind of thing and like sort of dealing with the expectations you've placed on yourself and on that the outside world has placed on you, and like kind of the expectations you still have for yourself, but that everybody else has kind of given up on you, and sort of like dealing with the mental side of all of that, I'm sure is very, very difficult. especially for these top prospects who have never been bad at baseball. They've always been literally the best player on their team.
Yeah. And then you get on a list where you're like, oh, of all the people who are in my category, I'm the eighth best player. You know what I mean?
I was drafted in the first round. I'm like the, you know, all the prospect people think I'm a top prospect. Yeah. Like I'm, you know,
That's a lot of,
it's got to be
a lot of weight.
It's got to be a mind fuck for sure. And I wonder, you know, going back to these guys who have the hot starts now, like I do wonder like what percentage of them is like, keeping that like general baseball player mindset of like, oh, I'm having a hot streak, right? Like this happens to everybody. Like I'm in the middle of it. I'm going to be good. I'm going to enjoy that versus like how much of them can't help but buy into the hype a little bit. And they're like 10% of them are like, you know, I'm on a hot streak, obviously, but also like nobody's ever had this hot streak before. Yeah. Like I must be like, that's kind of what you're saying.
Yeah. It probably depends on your personality too.
Yeah. For sure.
And I think that, but I think like it depends on your like, because it could be good for Bobichet because even because he knows he'll go through a slump because everyone does, right? Like it might be good for him in the sense of saying like, well, I know I can do it, like just knowing you could do it.
You get positive reinforcement of your skill, your talent. I have done this, so I can do it again.
Yeah, or something similar. Because like Vlad Guerrero coming up and struggling, it's like I'm sure he has confidence through the roof. So like, but you don't want those thoughts to sneak in and be like, oh man, can I get the big leagues? But like,
but isn't that almost a bigger mind fuck when if you become Jeff Francoeur or like Gordon Beckham as an example for the White Sox? Like Gordon Beckham had a great rookie year and like then sucked ass for the next 6 years, and all of these interviews were. Like every single spring training was like, well, I just got to get back to what I was doing. You know, like I've done it before, so obviously I can do it again. And then he couldn't do it again.
Oh, yeah.
It's been, yeah, you know, he's been in the majors for 12 years and clearly he cannot recreate
that. Could be,
that. Yeah. So like, what is the mental side of that?
Maybe that's a little too much confidence.
What the fuck happened to me? Like, what did I do?
I mean, yeah.
I think the mental side of being a professional athlete has got to be tough as hell. And like, They're compensated very well if they get to the top level to make up for that, but still, it's got to be really, really tough.
I think just us playing on our weekly zero stakes league,
the mental side of that is hard for sure.
Yeah, and I think baseball has its own unique thing because it's mostly thinking.
Yeah,
it's very little action because, like, at least in basketball, like once you're on the court, you're kind of just like doing it, and then you go back. But like, I mean, I know you have some time to think, but baseball is like. Even when you're at the plate, it's mostly thinking. Yeah. Like every pitch, you're like, okay, what's he going to throw? Like I have two strikes.
Like for us, when you know, when I have a good game, I'm like, I can do that every time. Like I finally like something clicked, you know, and then I have a bad game next time out, and I'm like,
what's happening?
What? My hands won't listen to what my brain says to do, kind of a thing.
They think about doing that every day and having it be your livelihood. Sure. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's just probably the type of person you are. Like, obviously, Mike Trout is like the perfect person to handle being called the greatest player ever for his entire career.
Yeah.
So some people probably couldn't handle it the same way.
Yeah. I think, by the way, we should like Mike Trout comes up, I think, in every podcast just because like it's so natural. Yeah. Of course he does. But like it should be like an official like. Mike Trout moment of respect. Like we just like bring up we're like, by the way, Mike Trout.
Well, when we were talking about it before, I was like, because there were two separate articles I read this week just trying to see if you take war out of the equation, would Mike Trout still be it's like slightly different angles. If this was 20 years ago, would Mike Trout still be considered the best player of all time? Because no one was looking at advanced stats.
Mm-hmm.
And they both were like, maybe not the best, but like yeah, he's probably already a top 50 player using any traditional measure.
Yeah. Like, just like I guess the disadvantage would be just the counting stats of like I feel like
the, but he's still like third in home runs for his age and like
Right. But I think to be the best player of all time, perhaps before these sort of like more advanced stats that even out across generations and whatever is like he would have to do it for another 10 years to be on par with Hank Aaron or Willie Mays.
Yeah.
And I guess he still does, but like as far as like peak.
Right. Both of the articles were more like comparing him to right now.
Got it.
And one, I think one was in the Ringer, and it was comparing just like how many different categories has he led the league in, and comparing that to other best players. And then the other one was just a straight up like, let's remove WAR and compare his just like raw, like traditional stats to every other player at his age.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was Fangraphs, and then coming up with, it might have been SB Nation. It was one of those two. And then coming up with whatever they came up with. And he's like, he's not the best if you look at it that way,
yeah,
but he's up there. And it's, again, it's compared to other people his age. So you're right. Pure counting, he'd have to do this for, if he like couldn't play after this year, I think he'd be a Hall of Famer traditionally, but he would be one. He'd be like Kirby Puckett.
Yeah. This is crazy. The most similar by ages that I was just talking about, you know, for Frank Coor.
Yeah.
For his full seasons, Mike Trout's are Frank Robinson, Mickey Mantle, Mickey Mantle, Mickey Mantle, Frank Robinson, Frank Robinson. So he's on a pretty good path.
That guy. Yeah. Well, yeah. So we'll just have our weekly Mike Trout moment.
Yeah.
He's
similar batters
so
through
good.
26. Frank Robinson, Ken Griffey Jr., Mickey Mantle, Hank Aaron, Miguel Cabrera, Orlando Cepeda, Mel Ott, Eddie Matthews, Andrew Jones, Albert Pujols. So you have to get down to number 9 before you get to not of Hall of Famer.
Or should be Hall of Famer.
Or will be Hall of Famer, yeah.
And also, some of the, like 4 of those players, we remembered their age 26 season. I mean, not exactly, but we were around for when they were 26.
Yeah.
And I feel like
Mickey Mantle, Mel Ott, Eddie Matthews.
Those guys, yeah. But like Pujols, Cabrera, Griffey, like think about how
and
good.
Jones.
And Jones. Think about how good we thought those players were when they were in their mid 20s.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. It's crazy how good
it's wild.
Yeah.
Well, before we wrap up, let's just talk quickly about the AL Central, because the Cleveland briefly tied the Twins for first place in the division after the Twins got out to this enormous lead at the beginning of the year. They're, as we're talking, Cleveland is one game back, but they are playing each other this weekend, so could potentially be tied again by the time you're listening to this, or perhaps the Twins will have a two-game lead.
It's 3-1 Indians in the bottom of the third as we're recording, so that doesn't really help because who knows how that game will go.
Yeah, but either way, this division has gone from the Twins are running away with it to it's either team's division.
Is the question, is it either team's division, or does it feel like the Indians are going to win, right? Is that the question?
I guess so, yeah. I mean, I don't feel like Cleveland is definitely going to win.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess the question is who's going to win? You know, do you take your chances on, if you were going to gamble on them right now, right? You're either betting on the Twins continuing to have the greatest home run hitting lineup in the history of baseball.
By a lot.
By a lot, which is, they just broke their team record for home runs with 6 weeks left in the season, 7 weeks left in the season. Or do you bet on sort of Cleveland
getting a little healthier?
Yeah, the first kind of month of 2 months of the season being Cleveland playing well below their capability versus now them playing kind of above their heads.
I mean, I think that's true the same way with the Mets, right? Like, I think it's kind of similar to the Mets as far as what we saw early was not as, they were worse than what they should have been, both the Indians and the Mets.
For sure. Well, you know, they were injured. Jose Ramirez was playing very badly.
Yeah.
He
was having such an atrocious season.
Yeah, and he's come back. His numbers are not as good as they were last year, obviously, but he's come back to his hitting line is about league average. He's been very hot lately. Lindor's been good. Carlos Santana is having maybe his best season. Yeah.
Lindor's been real good, right? Isn't he kind of like a down ballot MVP candidate?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah. I don't know that his line, I mean, he's hitting 300 with 20 home runs. Like, he's having an impressive season for sure. The pitching has been fascinating, I think, just in terms of, like, you know, they traded Bauer. Carrasco is on the DL or IL with, you know, leukemia, which is very,
so
very sad.
He's a wild card as far as...
And who knows? But, you know, they've coming into the season, that team's strength was Kluber, Bauer, Carrasco. And now they're potentially about to tie the Twins for first place with none of those guys on the active roster.
Yeah. But, and then Bieber is like in the Cy Young race. Yeah. You would say, right?
I mean, yes. He's Bieber's been amazing. Zach Plesac has been very good.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
In limited in 13 starts.
Is that Dan's son?
Mm-hmm. All right. Our nephew, I think. Okay. Mike Clevenger has been very good when he's been healthy. So it's just interesting, like, the fact that the team struggled so much as the favorites with this sort of roster that we consider the favorites, and now they're playing very well
with a materially different
roster. I don't know. I think I probably lean Twins still.
I think I do too, just because, you know, Bieber doesn't, we don't know how he's going to hold up down the stretch.
Bieber's has 11.1 strikeouts per nine innings and 1.8 walks per nine innings. That's crazy.
He could hold up, right? Like, I'm not saying he's not going to, but with these pitchers that are kind of, anytime a pitcher emerges, you always have that. We've also seen so many pitchers lose it in September,
right,
or regress severely to the mean in September.
And he's going to blow past his career high in innings.
So when those things happen, you can't really count on, you know, if it was Kluber or if they still had Bauer. Well, Bauer's, I feel like you can never count on him doing anything.
Yeah.
But like, I don't think you can count the innings out, though. I'm just saying that I think that the Twins aren't as good as they were when they started, but it's not like they haven't been playing poorly. They're like around 500 or like five games over, I think, since... Mm-hmm. Since whenever, and the Indians have just been playing really well.
Yeah, and I think there's kind of two ways to look at it for Cleveland. Either like you look at it and you say, with Kluber out and Carrasco out and Bauer gone, like they don't quite have the high end talent to keep up with the Twins, or maybe Kluber comes back, maybe Carrasco comes back, and suddenly it's like they're adding two All Stars right in the thick of the pennant race.
That's why I feel it's like this is like, I mean, you asked if I was betting, I know the hypotheticals if you had to bet, but like, this is like the biggest stay away. Mm-hmm. Like, I have no idea. There are just too many unknowns as far as like what's going on here. I'm also looking at Minnesota's schedule because I think that's, I mean, they're both going to have games against the White Sox and, geez, man, Minnesota. After the series with Cleveland, has two with Milwaukee and then four with Texas, which is tough. But then they play three against the White Sox, three against Detroit, three against the White Sox, three against Detroit.
Yeah,
so that's a hell of a stretch for
them. You're right
that
it could just come down to, you know, which one of these teams has played more games against Detroit and Kansas City already.
And then, the Twins have some games against Boston, and then they'll have, after the series, they have six more against Cleveland. They play the Nationals, but they end the season with three against the White Sox, four against Kansas City, three against Detroit, three against Kansas City.
Yeah, that's
so
a
that's
pretty huge
really
advantage.
Good for the Twins. So I think it might just come down. I'm looking at the other schedule. I think the Indians have a little bit tougher of a road ahead.
Because
they're playing the Mets, they're playing the Yankees, they play the Rays still, they play the Angels still, they play the Phillies still. And they end the season with the Nationals. So they still have the White Sox and Tigers, but I think the Minnesota
has a slightly easier schedule.
Yeah.
I mean, Minnesota is one of those teams that I think probably should have made a bigger swing at the trade deadline as well. Just
probably.
With the position they're in and with Cleveland sort of like hot on their heels, I think they probably could have used a starter. They could have used a bullpen arm. There's a lot. They don't have necessarily depth across the entire roster that you can count on. Like, their lineup has been very good, and so they probably don't need a home run hitter, I would say. But otherwise, like...
They don't?
Yeah. They kind of have Jose Berríos and then a bunch of question marks. And they have Taylor Rogers and a bunch of question marks. And even Taylor Rogers, okay, he's been really amazing this year, and I guess he was good last year too, but like, he's not who you think of as like the shutdown bullpen,
right? Yeah,
and maybe that's just a matter of perception, and maybe that doesn't matter. But I think there's a lot of pitching question marks that it makes me just think, you know, they still have a good farm system, or they have pieces. Like, go after somebody when you're in a position to make the playoffs already.
Yeah, I mean, they might have just been thinking like, we're set up. And they don't like the way that any other team in that division is set up, and they're like, "Well, let's." I think take our chances, and then I think our fundamental difference a lot of times is you're all about like going big and going for it, and sometimes I'm like, "Oh, you can go for it in 2022," which can fuck you over completely.
Yeah, I totally get that. Yeah. But
well, I get your side of it too. Like, yeah, you have a chance, especially if you're the Twins.
Especially if you're the Twins, and especially if the Indians are charging, and you're like, oh yeah, right, this is the team that made the World Series a couple years ago, that won 22 games a couple years ago, that could be getting back Corey Kluber at any moment.
That's true. Like, Carrasco could come back. Yeah.
Like, why would you risk kind of fumbling away this like incredible start to the season that maybe you'll never get again?
Yeah.
You know, and maybe, who knows, maybe the White Sox are good next year. Yeah. I'm not going to hold my breath on it.
The Royals will definitely be good next year.
So maybe this is your best opportunity to go into the playoffs with, you know, not worrying about the wild card or whatever.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's not having a, because you're probably facing the Rays or A's, and that's, you don't want to.
The Twins made the wild card a couple years ago and didn't make it out of the game. You know,
that Yankees, and they even like got to Severino. That was that game where they scored like four against Severino.
So they've seen
whatever.
The crapshoot, so you would think. But
can you imagine a Yankees Twins 5-game series? That's just going to be. I mean, the Yankees have a definite better bullpen, but man, I feel like there would be some runs in that series.
I think you are probably right.
Some runs that leave the park.
They would score some runs.
Those games in Yankee Stadium?
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's what I'm rooting for now. You want, right? You want the Astros to get the best records, and then the Twins win the division. So then there's Twins-Yankees in a 5-game series.
Yeah, which first team to like 60 home runs or something.
I think, just looking on the schedule and with all of the unknowns for the Indians, I guess I would have to bet on the Twins.
Mm-hmm.
Not have to, but if I had to bet, I think I'd bet on the Twins. But it's just like there are too many unknown factors.
Going back to the Fangraphs playoff odds, they have both teams above 90% to make the playoffs. So they're a lot more confident in Cleveland winning the wild card than Oakland or Tampa Bay even. Or one of those teams, I should say.
Yeah.
They have
the other one won
the Twins as a 2/3 favorite to win the division.
That makes
Indians
sense.
With 1/3.
Because Cleveland right now is 4 games up on Oakland. I mean, they're 2.5 up on Tampa Bay, who's 1.5 up. So Cleveland's 4 games ahead in making the playoffs.
Yeah.
So if I had to bet, I would bet that one of those, the loser
of
those division,
which is pretty impressive considering how long the Indians were hovering around 500.
Yeah. They would have, I wouldn't have never have thought that, because Tampa Bay had that hot start, who they still might make the playoffs. And then, you know, couldn't really discount Boston despite the fact that they started poorly. I would have been like, you know, six weeks in, 8 weeks in, I'd be like, we're probably not going to be talking about the Indians in September, but we definitely will be.
Here we are.
Yeah. Well, it's not September, but
it'll be a fascinating race to watch. I'm excited for that. I'm excited for the NL wild card. I think those are probably, and the NL Central, I think those are probably the races that we'll be focused on most closely as sort of a general baseball watching population. It should be a good end of the season, I think.
I think it'll be pretty fun. But those are really it as far as close, right?
Yeah. And then just,
do you think the Braves have it? Do you think that anybody can catch the Braves?
I would say like
there's 7 games.
Just mathematically, like the odds are slim.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's impossible.
I think they're the number one candidate to get caught.
Yeah. Out of all the teams that sort of still have a big lead, I would say for sure.
Can we just real quick mention the Field of Dream things?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally. Very exciting. If you haven't heard, the Yankees and White Sox will be playing the first major league game in Iowa ever next season.
Dyersville, Iowa, close
to your heart.
Yeah.
At the Field of Dreams field, I guess.
Well, they're building a new temporary field. They're not playing on the actual
field. But it's on the farm where they shot the movie Field of Dreams.
One of two farms, if you want some trivia. Okay. So when you go there...
Give me some Iowa trivia.
Well, it's Field of Dreams. What is that trivia? When you go there, it's really funny, though, because it is built on two farms, so there are two gift shops. Because each owner of the farm runs a gift shop.
Sure.
Which has
the better gift shop?
I remember the one that the farmhouse not being on. But their farmhouse is on one property. Like the I remember liking the gift shop from the non-farmhouse side, which I remember
little tip for anybody going to the game.
I might be wrong, but if I remember correctly, it's on the third base side.
Okay.
But that could be false. So no one write in. Hold your letters. I'm going to try to go. I don't know how to
take. Oh, you are?
I mean, it's an 8,000 seat thing. Everyone's going to try to go.
How far is it from where you grew up?
It's 5 hours from where I grew up, but it's an hour from where I went to college.
Gotcha.
So I'd probably take an opportunity. I'd probably try to go with my dad or something.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Field of Dreams. So I mean, I'll do what I can. My guess is it's going to be a lottery system.
Yeah.
But I'll do what I can to try to go.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the nice things about StubHub and all that, too, is like if you really want to go, if you lose the lottery, it'll be possible. Yeah, it just might just be like $300 or whatever.
But I'm going to. Yeah, I'll try.
But also, it's in the middle of fucking nowhere in Iowa, so like it'll be competitive to get tickets, but it's not
people
like
people might. Oh, it's far from any airport.
I don't think like there's going to be tens of thousands of people trying to make this pilgrimage.
No, it's probably not going to be as big as some other things could be, but I think a lot of certainly more than 8,000,
yeah. But it might be surprisingly less competitive than you imagine.
It is not the easiest place to get to. Mm-hmm.
Especially for a Yankees White Sox game.
Yeah.
I mean, there's Yankees fans everywhere, but I would imagine like a Cubs Cardinals game would be
harder
to get tickets
big
to.
Time. Also, if you're in Dyersville, Iowa, the Ertl Toy Tractor Factory is there, and they have a nice museum if you're into toy tractors. My dad collects toy tractors. So when we went, the time we visited Dyersville, it was like a real treat for the two McQueen men in the family.
I love that. Well, I hope that it works out for you to get to go again.
That'd
be awesome.
I would love to go. I think it'd be fun, even though I'd have to see the White Sox.
Yeah, that's a fate I wish on no man. All right. Well, we're about out of time. We'll be back next week, so stay tuned for more baseball squawking. With the Duck Store Boys. Squawk, squawk.
Squawk.
Thanks again to Boardwalk Audio and Off the Bench Baseball. Thank you to Moonbounce for the transition music, producer Joe for the theme music. Leave reviews, follow us on Twitter, all that good stuff. And we will talk to you next time. So long, squawk.
A Boardwalk Audio podcast. For more information and shows, visit boardwalkaudio.com. Don't forget to rate and subscribe now.